It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with...
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880. Horsebills.com is a call.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. A beautiful sight, we're happy tonight. We're walking in a winter wonderland. And gone away is the bluebird. But here to stay, stay, stay is a new bird. He sings a love song as we go along. We're walking in a winter wonderland.
We're back about 10, make it 15 actually, into hour three, coming to you from Remington. We're watching out here on the racetrack, and Donnie K. Von Hemel is going to join us in, I don't know, maybe... probably 20 minutes, 25 minutes, because right now out on the racetrack is Lil Sweet Thang, his Caleb's Posse gelding. the Dan McGaw homebred. And any time we can say hi to Donnie Kay, I'm happy to do so. So we're going to he's going to watch him train. Of course, coming off of the mile allowance win that paired up with the maiden breaker back in October. In the interim, he tried the Clever Trevor, and it didn't. Whether it's the wet track contributing, although by all rights, I wouldn't think with that pedigree, I wouldn't think that the wet track is an issue for him. Caleb's posse out of the Warriors Reward mare, but certainly took a step forward going two turns for the first time, winning that allowance. And that allowance race is going to be very key to the Springboard Mile, because you've got American Outlaw and Money Run exiting that as well. So the local contingent pairing up against the two obvious invaders when it comes to Echo Again for Asmussen and Giant Mischief for Brad Cox. But notably, yeah, the other seven, other than those two, the other seven Springboard Mile participants all exiting Remington races. I know that some of us, me and I'm sure others that heard Broberg with me on Tuesday, I imagine you're going to think long and hard about working Gunflash in the way Broberg talked about him. And I won't blame you. I mean, he's going to be close to 20 to 1, you would think. It would almost have to be, right? Off the maiden win. So this is going to be a lot of fun. We'll start to do some serious handicapping tonight, or this afternoon, actually, because the weird thing about the night racing, and you're either a night racing, I guess Rich Yang is with us, and I guess if you're if you live on the West Coast, you get to partake of night racing a little bit easier than those of us in the East. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Yeah, you know, when I moved to Nevada, to Las Vegas in 1999, you know, one of the things that I really enjoyed was that we were 3 hours ahead of everybody on the East Coast, right? I spent most of my life. And so, for example, like the National Football League, the games kick off at 10 a.m. on Sunday. I mean, that's beautiful. You have breakfast and you're watching football. And the same with horse racing. I mean, the signals out of Naira are starting at the 9:30 or 10 o'clock in the morning. And then when we get into Southern California, they have like a 1 o'clock post at most of the tracks out here, which is 4 o'clock back east. But, yeah, you can squeeze more action into the amount of the daylight hours, Steve.
Well, you get the opportunity to watch those. I've never really hooked into a night signal, and there's people that, well, I mean, Paul Matisse, for instance. I mean, he bets Mountaineer seriously, and he's a night owl. I mean, he doesn't sleep, and then he parlays it right into Hong Kong and other international, Australasian signals. And a lot of people do that. I've told you this before. In fact, it came up recently in Montreal, the one signal we used to stay up for, Rich, was Hollywood. Was when Hollywood have that Friday night. But that was a special kind of a thing. You know, Friday Night in the Hood was really fun. I mean, we used to do on our website, the Derby Trail at the time, we all used to hang around and post our plays and you know, that would go to like 1 a.m., 12:45 or so Eastern time. That was special. But when I lived in Montreal, if you went and caught a signal like that, then you'd wait and watch as the Chinese bettors would come rolling in at midnight, you know, for the night shift.
You know, you made my the cobwebs of my brain kind of clear away a little bit talking about what you just did, because before I came out to the Nevada for the Las Vegas Review Journal horse racing gig, doing the handicapping and the writing the columns, I was working in New Jersey with Monmouth Park and the Meadowlands, and I remember at the Meadowlands they started doing the simulcast from Hong Kong, and the Chinese workers would come in from the restaurants in Manhattan and would flood into the Meadowlands for the Hong Kong signal. That would start like around, you know, I guess around midnight or 1 o'clock. I'm trying to remember, but it was late. And on the Friday nights, Hollywood Park would start to have the Friday nights, which I believe was about 7 o'clock Western in Pacific time. So that'd be around 10 p.m. Eastern time. So the action was just heating up here in the middle of the night. So I remember those days very fondly, Steve. Before I moved to Nevada, was those Meadowlands nights.
Well, and Meadowlands, we were with the other night. The John, I mentioned that John Parada and Maggie, they had a get together, and Alan Gutterman, who you must have, did you overlap with Alan at NYRA?
You know, I did not overlap with Alan Gutterman at NYRA, but I did work for him at the Meadowlands. We were together for a short period of time at the Meadowlands. So Alan is a dear friend, and I got to see him. Must have been about 4 or 5 years ago. He came out to Vegas. We had supper with some people, and Alan's one of my favorite people in all of horse racing. For the listeners out there who have met or worked with Alan Gutterman, I mean, he is just a treasure. And I just wish he was still more active in the game. Maybe he is more so than I know, but what a treasure he is for the industry.
Well, and he, you know, he had the time at the Meadowlands. He was talking about and Hammer. You know, Hammer was there too. The absolute glory era at the Meadowlands when it was basically new. And I remember going over a couple of times when I lived in the city, and it was a vibrant scene. I mean, that Pegasus restaurant, it was like a place to, you know, be seen. Literally, it was hopping.
Oh yeah, going back to the Sonny Warblin days and Bob Quigley and that era. I mean, that the Meadowlands was an unbelievable success. And you know, one thing Alan started, which I don't know if people still remember, you know, because nowadays having big stakes race days where they pile up 4, 6, 8, 10 stakes races on a card, Alan started the concept with something called $1 Million Babies at the Meadowlands, and it was the harness cards, and they would have one stakes race after another for 2 year olds, and he kind of started that concept in New Jersey, and now it's been basically copied for the last few decades all over the country. But great idea. I mean, they had just huge crowds at the Meadowlands, and Alan was certainly the innovator of a lot of that.
Well, wanted to make sure, Rich, to connect, and a couple of weeks left in the broadcast season. The release, and are we shipping books yet? Are people going to their mailbox yet?
No, I'm still waiting. It's going to be, when I went to the link, it did say the release date is December 28th, so I might have misspoken that it was going to be out before Christmas. But the link that you provided on the Facebook and also on Twitter, and I know people have asked me for it. I posted. I'll try to repost it again. But pre-orders are definitely being taken over Amazon.com, and quite a few people have already partaked on that. And so I'm looking forward to it. It should be hopefully a fun gift for people. If they want post-Christmas gift, it would be great to give to a friend or a family member, someone who's a newcomer to the horse racing and maybe asking you too many questions. You can say, here, read this. You can catch up real quick on this great sport and this great betting gamble. You know, I'm in the center of the gambling mecca of the country here in Las Vegas, but I still believe deep in my heart, Steve, that the horse racing is the best gamble among all the gambles out there. There are so many factors that you can control your destiny to a greater degree than if you're trying to bet on football or basketball or baseball or hockey even. But horse racing is still a great gamble. So hopefully people can spread the word among their friends and family about this.
Well, and in terms of, Rich, in terms of the learning curve, and you know, I know I asked you, you know, as you were making the changes, and in fact that actually you could actually broach that in terms of going through the first version and, you know, noting the areas that, you know, you knew you would need to amend. I mean, what was that process like, and how did you identify areas that needed to be, you know, reworked, essentially, that the game had changed, and that handicapping philosophy and ticket building philosophy had changed? I mean, I know I asked you what you determined was the biggest change to address, but run through that. I'm curious what the process was like.
Yeah, just to kind of attack that question and try to give a coherent answer without taking up too much of your time. But I reread the first edition of the book, which came out in 2004. And now I had the knowledge of basically two decades later of what the landscape of horse race handicapping looks like now. And there's just so much more out there. It's almost thinking about like when the first handheld pocket calculators came out, many, many, many years ago. You'd have these little handheld calculators, and they were costing like $200. And basically, if you took a look at them now, you'd just be laughing at how simplistic they were. But, you know, the technology just explodes in all areas, and it has done so in horse racing. So, you know, the way I kind of attacked second edition, Steve, is I still think it's extremely important for people to learn how to handicap on their own and learn the basics of handicapping. And that's what this book, the fundamental aspect of what I was trying to accomplish is, you know, help people learn how to handicap on their own. But, you know, once as you graduate step by step up the ladder of knowledge and experience, there are just so many more technological things that are out there that can help you be a better horse player, be a better handicapper, be a better ticket construction. And, you know, these are things that were not available 20 plus years ago. And so that's part of the reasons why I think it's such a great gamble, is that there are so many things that can help you be a winning horse player. And, you know, I tried to outline some of that, a lot of that, in the second edition.
A couple of thoughts on that, actually, because you bring up a great point. I mean, you had mentioned how the explosion of multi-race wagers, essentially, you know, was the biggest change since Volume 1. But at the same time, we should probably address the tools. You think about something like Formulator and Ticket Builder. Mm-hmm. And I think we also included, when we did maybe last month or even a couple of months ago, even going back to when you announced the second edition, the computer assisted wagering teams and some of that, and the, you know, the difficulty in finding value? I mean, did you address that? I mean, the way in which it's gotten harder. I mean, the game is it's harder to win essentially than ever before, and I don't think anybody would argue about that.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, that trend, when you think about it historically, Steve, that trend has actually been common throughout horse racing. And the fact that, like, for example, go back to when Len Ragusan first came out with his sheets, the very few people who had the original sheets and had access to them had a huge advantage over all horse players because the sheets were so good at you know, deciphering winners and helping people construct tickets. But as, you know, they basically became more widespread and marketable, then more and more people had that information. So, you know, that drives prices down. You know, something as basic as like the buyer speed figures before they were in the Racing Times and then switched over to the Daily Racing Form. You know, people who had access to a decent speed figures also had an advantage. And then when buyer speed figures came out, that helped a lot of people become winning horse players, and that too drove prices down. So, you know, it's been an evolution that has been actually going on for a long time as far as making it harder to try to find value. But, you know, the thing is, if I would compare, you know, trying to bet on horses compared to, like, betting on football, I mean, like, for example, in football this Sunday, you could do all the work in the world and, you know, if you bet a football game, you're still betting at, you know, -110, you know, to whether it's you know, like the New York Giants or you know, like the Washington Commanders in the game on Sunday. But in horse racing, at least when you, you know, do your handicapping and try to isolate a horse or two or whatever in a straight bet, I'll just do the straight pool for now as a comparison, you can still look at the odds board and you're not betting -110. You're looking whether it's 2-1, whether it's 3-1, whether it's 5-1. And you can at least make a more educated decision if a horse is enough value to actually make a play or whether you just want to pass. And that's another thing, too. The thing is, betting on any particular horse, any particular race, is a voluntary activity. You don't have to bet every race. And, in fact, I make that point many, many times in the book that it's okay to pass. It's okay to pass a race. It's okay to pass a sequence. You don't have to bet everything, and in fact, your percentage of winning will go up if you're more selective. So that's a great question, Steve, but I still think that there are opportunities to make money on betting on horses. You just got to be a little more selective, I believe.
Well, and the selectivity portion, you're making me think of another, actually, this is also goes back to the hippo clubs in Quebec, and I wish I remembered this guy's name. There was a player that would come on a regular basis, and he's watching, and he had a approach that I've really not, I'm sure there's plenty of people that operate this way, but he had a set of conditions that had to be, you know, just so for him to make a prime play. And this was somebody that only bet prime bets, did not have any action bets. Would not, you know, just sit there and you know, get an inkling of this horse. I'm going to play this one. This horse looks all right. I'm going to do something. He wouldn't do that. He would identify opportunities and horses, you know, partially on trip and circumstance, and then wait them out and would basically be looking for kind of a trips and traps style. And the horse had to be, and I want to get the price right, had to be over, I believe, 7-2. 7-2 or no, yeah, I think it was 7-2. I think I've maybe mentioned 9-2 once or twice telling this, but I'm pretty sure 7-2 was the number he had to have. And if the horse literally, if it dipped under 7-2, if it went to 3-1, he would walk away, and he might wait, you know, a month to bet a horse. But when he got his prime play where he wanted it, I mean, he would bet thousands and thousands. And it was something. I mean, and obviously the price, you know, he depending on the pool, depending on the venue. I mean, the way he bet, he had potential, you know, to take it down a tick. But I've never seen anything like it. And I mean, he would show up, and you could tell he was there to, you know, to play. And I'd seen him play and win. I'd seen him lose, and I'd seen him walk away. But he won more than he lost, I'll tell you that.
You know, it's ironic you come up with an example like that because, obviously, over the years, I have made friends with many, many, many horse players and horse racing fans. And I've actually made friends with a professional horse player who calls me from time to time when he has a horse that he likes. And I'm thrilled when he calls because his opinion is so good that I really respect it. And in yesterday's, at Gulfstream Park yesterday, this is an example where if the listeners, if you can take a look at your racing form from yesterday or go to Equibase or the DRF.com, take a look at the seventh race at Gulfstream Park yesterday. He calls me about an hour before the race, Steve, and we're looking at the race, and it's a maiden specials, fillies and mares, but there was a horse that he absolutely loved. And he says it's the number four horse, Dreamster. And so we're looking at the horse, and he asked me to watch the replay, which I was able to do off my computer. And this horse is from a trainer who, quite frankly, I am not familiar with at all, Mary Leitner. Maybe you know something about her, but I'd never really heard of her.
Seen her name.
And so I just watched the replay, and this horse actually made a nice middle move and then, you know, flattened out late, but was running for maiden claiming 40, and I was running for maiden special weight. But he said there was something about the pedigree and the race that he liked. And then I noticed that, of all people, Tyler Gaffleone takes the mount. So, we're talking about this in the phone conversation back and forth. And so, he said, I'm going to play this horse. And so I'm glad he called because I played the horse too, and Tyler gave this horse just a beautiful ride. But, you know, this person that I'm talking about, I don't know if he's listening. I hope he is. But he kind of fits the mold of what you were just talking about. He could go a week, 2 weeks. He could go 3 weeks before he makes another bet. But when he zeroes in on a horse, he is laser sharp. And, you know, this can be done. You know, I don't know about the patience part. I know I'd have a difficult time being that patient. But this horse player, I hope he's listening. He is tremendous, and you know it's something that can be accomplished. It's not easy, and he has the patience of Job. But I just wanted to use that race yesterday as an example because he called me about an hour before the race and said, "I like this horse," and so that was profitable for me, profitable for him. But it just shows you that it can be done to beat this game.
Well, 8-1 morning line ended up going off at over 11-1 and wins by 3/4. Second longest price on the board and pays $25.
Yeah, that can feed a lot of hungry mouths for a while. $25. So.
Well, for sure, this was a Jess's dream, and Mary Leitner doesn't, you know, you see her name, but she doesn't start very many horses, but she wins. Five for 21 on the year.
Yeah, if your listeners know who she is, I've been in the game for 40 years, and quite frankly, this was the first time I noticed her name when this horse player called me and said, "I like this horse." I did not know anything about Mary Leitner, and God bless her. She must know what she's doing because she did a heck of a job getting this horse prepared. And you know, we talked about. Me and my horse player friend about why she would run this horse at maiden claiming 40,000 in the debut with the risk of losing the horse. And I was thinking, well, you know, trainers do play kind of trainer poker in the fact that if the horse does not get claimed and now wins this second start, Now she has a whole condition book full of races that she can fit the Zors into. So, you know, sometimes you take a shot to with something in the future that you, you know, want to pursue certain races at Gulfstream that she's eligible. Optional claimer 40, starter allowance 40, that kind of stuff. Now she's got a good condition book to run this horse next time out.
Well, and, you know, it's funny. That's her second win. That's her second win at the meet, Rich, and she's 2-for-5 at the meet. And the first one that she won with just 4 days earlier, Curlin's Choir, maiden 16 at 10-to-1.
Wow, there we go.
First time starter, 1-by-8.
I tell you what, Steve, that ROI just jumps right off the page at anyone who's a horse player. Unbelievable.
Very clever, and her other winners. Well, she did this year. She had a horse win at 1-to-2 at Gulfstream, a maiden 10. She's not unknown. 5-to-1 winner back in August. 40-non-2. Pretty slick. Mary Leitner, and the part about Dreamster that probably aided that price to get her from 8-to-1 to 11-to-1. This was a class raise. She had debuted at the filly had debuted at maiden 40, and moved up into maiden special weight company. And 60 buyer won this race, and 25. We'll see. I have no idea. You know, if Mary and she owns the horse herself, Jess's Dream. So good story. Good job, Rich. Great way to capitalize. It's a perfect tie-in.
And another angle too, and this segues back into my book. You know, one thing that I wrote about in the jockeys chapter of Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies second edition is I have a line that I use where I say I let sometimes it's better just to let the jockey and their agent handicap a race for you. Because when you see a top jockey, and in this case, Tyler Gaffalione, get on a horse that's kind of nondescript, there's always a reason. And Steve, you're a horse owner and control stable. If you certainly have a live horse, if you can get one of the Ortiz brothers or Joel Rosario or whatever to ride your horse, I mean, that's a big plus. And so sometimes, you know, in a situation like this, for example, Tyler and his agents were more than willing to ride this horse for a trainer and owner that, quite frankly, personally, I did not know anything about. But for them to jump on the horse, obviously, they had good inclination that this horse was going to run well. So, you know, that's an angle, too, for people out there that, you know, to put in their handicapping toolbox.
Well, and for those that want to know more, as it happens, we have found Mary on Twitter, Mary Leitner, Lighter, and she congratulated her father and obviously another partner, Lisa Gooden, who's at Shooting Star Thoroughbreds, and it looks like she's at Oak Ridge Training Center. There you go. So,
well, Steve, if you and I helped her get a little more business, I would be so pleased because she helped me.
I think Mary's doing okay. I you know, and you know, Rich, on this topic, it's funny. On this topic, this is a horse that's at a training center, Ocala, and so, you know, you're not getting her. This filly isn't going to show up in the workout reports. So it's that's another aspect of the modern game that that makes it harder to cash. The wider dissemination of workout reports and the workout videos, of course, XBTV, and you know that for the longest time it was only the West Coast. Really, it was only national turf for the most part, and a couple of other private clockers that were selling information. you know, the East Coasters, we never had what DRF is offering now with Welsh and everybody, you know, Mike Vesey and Dave Norton and Dave Grenig all contributing to these clocker reports. We never had that on the East Coast. And that's another, you know, another tidbit.
Yeah, you know, and that's another part of the book updates from 20 years ago is the fact that this clocker information is more widespread. I mean, we even have a Bruno DiGiulio, Bruno with the Works out there. So I mentioned three clocker organizations, Andy Harrington, of course, on the West Coast. But clocker information used to be in the hands of very few. And if you had good information, you can make a nice score. But now the clocker information in the hands of many more people, it's more accessible. And that in turn, if a horse is working great, more people will know about it and, you know, kind of depresses the price. But at least it gives people more access to potential winners. And, you know, that, to me, that's all good.
Rich Angs, Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies, back with a all new, improved, and refreshed, and getting ready to start shipping them out. Rich, I appreciate it. I'm going to get Donnie Von Hemel to come say good morning here, and we'll get an update on his Springboard Mile Runner, and we will wrap up the year next week, next Thursday, and we will have, as it happens, we will have opening day Santa Anita PPs to talk about, and Rich's analysis, of course, for the Southern California circuit, available at racedaylasvegas.com. Let me get Donnie in here. We got about 10 minutes to be able to talk to Donnie. He just got clear after watching his gelding, and I'm anxious to hear, and just happy to talk to Donnie K. Donnie K. Von Hemel, good morning.
How are you doing today?
Donnie, terrific. I'm upstairs. I'm on the front side and happy to be back at Remington. The last time I was here, I was giving you a trophy for K Fine Oaky. Our Fine Oaky?
D Fine Oaky.
D Fine Oaky. I knew there was a letter involved.
<My God>.
2007, I think, right? Is that about right?
Yeah, it's been a while back.
Well, delighted to see the, you know, the kind of year that you've enjoyed, and it's certainly there's a certain harmony to you having Lil Sweet Thang in the mile for Dan McGaw, homebred, a Texas bred, and a Caleb's Posse, and this looks like a forward going horse.
Yeah, we've been very happy with him. He showed he had a little talent from the beginning, and. And he had a little bit of a rough go in the slop his second out, but he came back and won going two turns his next time out, and I think he's headed the right direction. Has, you know, like I said, has some talent, so we're gonna see what he can do.
Well, and it's funny, I mentioned it sure seemed like after the maiden breaker, which came at six, it did seem like maybe the wet track didn't suit him. But it's funny because from a pedigree standpoint, he shouldn't necessarily have a challenge in the mud, but whatever. It doesn't matter. When you stretched him to a mile, I mean, he fits with the two invaders in here, Donnie.
Well, I hope so. I know they'll be plenty tough, and there's a handful of horses that have been running here have all shown to have some talent too. So I think it's you know, it's a pretty good race to really find out where your horse is. So,
well, and you trained that dam, didn't you?
I did. She was not very successful, but you know, that's how the breeding works. Sometimes you just pass on the good genes, I guess. So,
well, and tell me about the McGaws, because I see that his wife actually bred the dam.
Yeah, it's actually pronounced McGue.
McGue.
But yeah, they're just small time breeders. Usually have one, maybe two mares at the most. And he sent me a horse. That was about 10 years ago. And my master plan, and she she went in like her first four outs, and he knew it wasn't that easy, but the first one was very good. Then we had a couple that weren't as fast since then, but looks like he's got another one that's sure gonna have some fun with. So,
well, you know, and boy, I'm just looking at the page. The family, that third dam was a good horse for Chris Block. That Lighthouse Lil was a good Illinois bred.
Yeah, you're right.
Huh. What an interesting family. Well, you know, from a fake standpoint, I'm looking forward to tonight to seeing Thoroughgraph and that mile, what that performance, how that, you know, matches up in here. And obviously between Asmussen and Brad Cox and I suppose Todd Fincher's horse, I mean, the American Outlaw is local, but you already beat American Outlaw. I've been singing the praises of the Springboard Mile, Donnie, for the last several years, and we'll find out later this week, maybe tomorrow, about the graded stake committee. But this thing is knocking on the door of being a grade three.
Yeah, I think it probably, you know, there were some years in there. Of course, you know, Caleb's Posse ran in it. Sunbreaking News ran in it. You know, all the horses I've had in the last few years that were graded stakes type horses, you know, have been in that race. And of course, Steve Asmussen has supported it very well. Brad Cox, he supported it very well, and horses have gone on. And if it's not a grade three, it's dang close to it anyway. So,
well, Donnie, talk a little bit about, you know, the approach in here. One of the nice things about Little Sweet Thing, it was able to break the maiden attending a pace, but then won the allowance. Rating very nicely for Q.
Yeah, I think we have some versatility. I think that you know, sometimes a lot of these horses haven't been two turns yet, and you don't know you know, just how the first quarter mile of the race is going to go. So I think we're going to have to rely on Louis Quinones to use some good judgment around that first turn about what the pace is and where to place his horse. But I think that bit of versatility helps him out, you know, where he's rated a little bit. And, you know, the muddy track, he ate a lot of mud that day, so maybe it won't be so bad if it's just a little bit of dirt in his face too. So,
well, he draws the four hole, and we don't have a morning line, but you gotta think he's gonna be. Wow, I mean, that's why this is such a fun race. Obviously, Asmussen and Cox will be your favorites. Fourth choice, maybe in the 6-1 range, 8-1.
Yeah, I'd say probably eight to one or so. I think there'll be some support for Wild Atlantic Storm and then Todd's horse. I think there'll be some support there, and I think Danny Pish's horse will probably get some support too. Let's see, the Oklahoma bred, he's ran a couple of nice races here lately. And then Broberg, a very well bred first-time starter winner coming back. So I think you probably, you know, if you can figure out a way to get past the top two, you know, you can make some money in this race.
I agree. And, you know, it's funny you bring up Broberg. I happened to reach out to him. And the other day, off of his nice win at Oaklawn, with that flash of mischief, and he was who's related, the older brother, and he was worried that he was going to get excluded if this thing overfilled, because he really wanted to run this horse in here and thinks he'll stretch out nicely. This is going to be what a great way to end the meet too, right? You know, to wrap everything up.
Oh, yeah. And hopefully we'll get a good crowd out here and everybody will have some fun, and maybe somebody will make some money along the way.
Well, Donnie K. Von Hemel with us. And Donnie, you basically, with the new Oaklawn calendar, the way things have kind of shifted, you got to kind of straddle both venues with the opening weekend, and you had a couple already, you know, get going. You got a couple of entrants coming up tomorrow as racing resumes at Oaklawn. Tell us about those maidens, Pappy Wolf and Peer Pressure.
Yeah. I think Pappy Wolf, of course, is, you know, got the experience edge, and he's a horse who seems to be coming around. I think he'd be my favorite of the two.
Hmm.
Both drawn outside, it's kind of a tough deal in one of those mile races at Oakland, and that might be a bit of a deterrent for both of them. But I think in the end, you know, they're both going to show some run, and just have to see how we can get through that first turn without losing too much ground.
Well, we'll pause on Temple Street, on the one out of Temple Street for a minute. Pappy Wolf, this is a Justify colt that has, when you mention, you know, gotten some experience, debuted at Kentucky Downs and then a couple of tries at Churchill. The Street Cry mare, Temple Street, this is the dam of Donworth, who I remember Graham Motion had, and Conti Partiro, who was a nice stake horse too, a scat daddy. So this is a nice family.
Yeah, I think Dr. Zellner bought him last year. I was a little surprised, you know, he got him for what he did, I think. So we're trying to make the gamble pay off here.
Well, boy, and you know, you bring up a good point. I mean, that was a good-looking page, and that was a book one yearling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So, I haven't found a hold of him yet, so we've shown some greenness when we ran, but I think the experience under his belt, hopefully most of that's behind us now. So
how about that? Tyler Bayes is going to ride, and then for Kindred Thoroughbreds, a Virginia bred Peer Pressure, who's a son of a Stern.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which, you know, that's not your top 10 sire list or anything like that, but he's
okay.
He's a big, good-looking colt, and I think he's going to go two turns. Didn't really show like he needed any kind of a sprint warm up or anything like that. So we're going to dive in there, and I think he'd probably be a horse that he'd be running at the end. Hopefully we can run by a few and then get him you know, some good experience.
Should ask you too, Donnie, before we pull up. You do have later tonight in that seventh race, Sawyer Sweetie. This is an Oklahoma bred, a Mr. Speaker filly. Second time starter.
Yeah, she's second start, and we're giving her a little easier spot to run in this time, hopefully, and with the race under her belt, I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't get up there and be in the thick of it. So
well, this is Toby Keith, right?
Yes sir.
Nice. That's tonight, and the one more. Let me ask about one more maiden. See if we can't get somebody a winner. River Sport tomorrow.
Yeah, same deal on him. We're dropping him down to see if he needs to stay a colt or not. And I think hopefully he shows us enough that he's not a gelding a couple days. I think he has a little talent, but he's a bit of a playboy, and he may need to be a gelding after this, no matter. But I think it should be a bit of an easier spot, and he should move forward. But he might be too much of a playboy to realize that yet. So
well, that's one of those decisions that you know. You, sometimes you grudgingly make it, but the better to have something to work with. So.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Well, Donnie, great to have you, and hope maybe I get to call you back even on Monday when I'll be home in New York. But I'll see you out here tonight or tomorrow night, or certainly by Saturday night.
Yeah, we'll be around, and thanks for having us on.
Not at all. Donnie K. Von Emel, everybody, one of our absolute favorites, and great to see him have a very good year at a tough couple of quiet years, and feels like the pendulum came back in the right direction. Thanks to Donnie K. and Rich Eng, Pat McKenna with us earlier, Tony Black, and Dave Hill from Vegas. Two Vegas calls today. Yeah. All right. Well, racing here tonight and elsewhere. You got more of a full schedule for a Thursday. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. Twin Spires weekend preview at the races live from Remington. Thanks, everybody. Good luck today. Talk to you in the morning.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety.